previously.tvpodcastnetwork.
What are you doing here?
Bad-mouthing men.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210. Today's episode is Season 8, Episode 14, Santa Knows. And here are your hosts, Sarah D. Bunting and Tara Ariano.
Hello.
Hello.
It's Christmas in March.
Uh-huh.
Let's just do this.
Were we this naughty, Tara, that we deserve to get this psychological abuse from Santa? I don't think we did.
No.
Anything that bad.
Can I have your attention, please?
It sucks.
The fact that this episode is also dropping the week of your birthday feels especially cruel. So let us get through it as quickly as we possibly can.
More like my barf day.
Nice.
Right. Let's get it over with.
Starting with our C plot, Zach and Noah both need help getting into the Christmas spirit. So Noah is having a Christmas party at the Peach Pit After Dark with a Santa, and Donna starts looking through the boxes of ornaments, and he says those don't work about a box of like shiny ball ornaments. Like, work? He means they don't have hooks, and so she has to show him how to MacGyver a paperclip, asking if he's never decorated a tree before. He says it's not his thing. At his house, they had minimal decorations, generally executed by the staff, and Donna is very sad about all the Christmas spirit Noah was denied and mugs about it in a very Donna-ish way.
She also does not mention that it's her birthday, and nobody else mentions it either.
No, she does not. And no, they do not, which bugged me also. Thank you for bringing that up.
You are welcome. It's just us out here on this crappy iceberg known as caring about continuity on the show.
Including, please, like, continue. You would think even Tori Spelling might have been like, hey, should someone say, but no. Anyway.
Clarence? In jail.
Carly won't tell Steve what to get her for Christmas, which Emma says is a test. And here's another one. Zach's shitty little friend, Billy, tells him there's no Santa Claus and demands that Carly tell Billy. Sorry, Zach demands that Carly tell Billy he's wrong and she freezes. And when they go to the Peach Pit later, Zach has gone full Santa truther, but Donna and her crazy boobs have the solution. She brings him next door to the Peach Pit After Dark, where the party is in full swing, including the Santa, and Zach is thrilled until Santa stands up, rips off his hat, and starts stripping, because it's not an old bearded man, it's a young woman, and they really take a long time to get Zach out of there under the circumstances. And Donna is horrified that a private party thrown by and for adults would request a Santa stripper, and scolds Noah for not having put a sign on the door like, you knew it was a private party and you let yourself in anyway, lady. And then blames Noah for traumatizing Zach, who was never supposed to be there, in clip two.
God, is that what Christmas means to you?
No, I just wasn't thinking. It's
exactly. You didn't think because it means nothing to you. Not sure what does. Forget it. I'm not going to do this again.
What are you not doing?
And if all this had been lead up to him not guessing that it was her birthday, I would have maybe understood that she was having PTS David. Okay. But then her birthday is not mentioned.
Yeah.
And also, who cares? And also, get a brassiere that lifts and separates for the love of my cornea, now literally in the garbage can.
Yeah. Everyone doesn't have to care the same amount about Christmas. Like, it's not the law. So get a grip.
Yeah. Also, you're a lifelong Angelino. Not everyone celebrates.
Yeah. Including your last boyfriend, who was Jewish, as I recall. So if you're all like, I'm not doing this again, what exactly is it you're not doing? Because that's getting into an anti-Semitic place. Anyway.
He also doesn't seem to recall that he's Jewish because...
No, that's true.
Yeah, whatever. Moving on.
So, because apparently this is a thing all of Donna's boyfriends have to do, Noah comes to bother her at a photo shoot while she's trying to work, and she actually has a lot of insight about her situation for once in clip three.
I thought we had something here.
We can't while you're still working at the club. Letting Valerie work on you, on us, keeping secrets.
What secrets?
Look, I've done this before. I've been with someone who could only get through the bad times alone. Well, I just stood there thinking everything was fine.
Everything is fine. Look, you're upset about the stripper. It's not going to happen again. Now, if it's something else, you got to let me know.
David lied to me about the club. About a lot of things, including Valerie.
Look, I'm not David. I'm not going to make the same mistakes he did. But I can't make up for him either.
And I'm scared. I'm scared that it's going to be the same exact thing.
I mean, I'm glad you brought up that this is extremely, like, shitty of him to come bug her at work. Like, mm-hmm. She just told you she couldn't do this right now. Walk away.
Yeah. People are very inconsiderate on the show is something I am learning.
Yes, I do believe you're correct.
So Carly and Steve try to double team Zach about his letter to Santa with some BS about the real Santa being at the North Pole, but he just asks to go to his room. But he did start the list before all this happened. Will he get a basketball, mega gun, tree fort, and rocket? Stay tuned. So Noah comes back to his stupid boat to see that Donna's there and that Christmas has thrown up all over the joint. She won't ask him to make up for the past. If he will let her show him how things can be different, he agrees. No one cares. Eventually, everyone ends up at the Walsh house, including Santa, which in this case is Nat. Sanders
who has
Claus
a kid and a wife of his own. Show.
Who aren't there. Yeah, he doesn't bring them either. Furthermore, as I have in my notes, Sanders Claus or get the fuck out.
Amen.
So Donna tells Nat not to bother looking for Zach since he's not that into Santa this year. Speaking of, Carly brings Zach outside where he sees there's a treehouse in the backyard covered in Christmas lights, which is cute. And he is very cute about it.
It's true.
And when we next see him, he's popping his head up to look through the window at Santa. Nat looking around the backyard for his keys. And with that, Zach believes again. Phew. On to our B plot. Val and David help a gay. So David doesn't think that Nat will buy that Val has fallen for a guy who works at a car wash. Or not Nat, sorry, Noah. To which Val says Noah knows she fell for him when she thought he just worked on a boat. Did he, though? And wasn't that the whole reason they broke up, pretty much, as I recall?
Yeah. Which David points out.
So Ben is still sleeping at the car wash and declines David's offer to let him crash at the Walsh house, perhaps because he says he's sure it would be okay and Ben is more considerate of the Walsh house residents than David is, considering David is not paying rent, probably. David picks up Ben's sleeping bag and sees two wrapped presents, which are for his parents. And David can't believe he would get them anything after they kicked him out, probably because David is too big a clod to have bought Mel anything in, like, years. But Ben figures his parents can't be mad at him forever. And Val rolls up with lunch for David and Ben, and David hugs her for being as nice as a real girlfriend, and she gives him a quick update on what's up with Noah, but it clearly wasn't top of mind. Why ever not, one wonders. And then David drives Ben to his house so he can deliver his parents' Christmas presents while his dad is still at work. And his mother meets him on the front walk and refuses to take the presents because his dad will just throw them away. Ben puts them on the ground at her feet. She begs him to take them until his dad cools off. Ben wants to come home. His mom wants that too, but dad is the boss of her, apparently, because she just says soon, but has no timeline and feels real bad, but is useless in clip 4.
Are you okay?
No, he's not.
David, don't.
This is ridiculous. It's Christmas. How can you treat him like this?
Look, Ben, it's not her fault, okay?
Jerry just doesn't understand.
We'll explain it to him.
And what do I say? Oh, Ben, your father had so many dreams for you. You're smart. You're good at sports. You were so popular. You always had girls calling at the house.
I'll be the same person, Mom. I'll get good grades. I'm going to go to college.
Ben, your life, it'll be so different. Honey, your father loves you. If you'll just forget
just
about
be something I'm not. My dad hates me. I make him sick.
Ben. I'm just so scared for him. I
should be. But not because he's gay, because he's 17 and he's sleeping at a car wash. Look, I'm doing what I can, okay? But you gotta know, he's alone.
His father... We just need some time.
I hope you have it.
He's such a prick. Oh my God.
I mean, I sort of don't disagree with someone being a prick to his mom. Like,
sure.
Fuck you, that's your kid. Cross yeah. your husband, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, dude. Also, if you're so invested in Ben, the quality of Ben's living situation, why not invite him to move in to your 4-bedroom pantaloons? It's not like
really...
your dick is taking up that much room.
No, it Burst. Is not. So back at the car wash for dinner, I don't understand how their shifts work. David can't believe Ben is okay after what happened at his parents' house. Ben says he doesn't have to worry about waiting for his parents to let him come home because he's arranged to move in with his aunt in La Jolla. And David hopes the worst has passed him and takes off with a taco so that when he's gone, we can see on Ben's face that the La Jolla story is probably bullshit and Ben's plan is actually just to leave the car wash and never come back rather than deal with David's aggressive help anymore.
Yeah.
But then David comes back to the car wash because he realized Ben had never told him about this alleged aunt and uncle before, but that he had said David was the only person he knew who was okay with him coming out. So many old-fashioned things about this storyline, by the way. Like, just, you know, coming back and forth, the not being able to research people on Facebook, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, Ben crying looks like he's trying to stifle a yawn. And David asks what Ben is hiding behind his back, thinking it's a gun or pills, like a broke kid could afford either. In fact, it is a razor blade. David, who has also had suicidal ideation, handles this with sensitivity and empathy. JK, clip 5.
You're going to cut yourself, Ben. You're going to cut yourself! Your dad isn't worth that.
Man, and what am I worth?
Oh, well, if David were my only confidant, I'd be eyeballing the the single blades as well. Like, not only is this attitude completely, like, non-functional for this situation, it's
yeah.
not even acted well. Like, he's not even good at acting, like, all offended. And then mm-hmm. this continues with Valerie later. Like, what is with the, like, let's be super confrontational and basically dare the person with suicidal ideation to go through with it.
Yeah. It seems like screaming in one's face is not what you're supposed to do.
Yeah. Or have, like, straight talk with this kid you barely know. Like,
mm-hmm.
call 911 and say that you have evidence that he's gonna harm himself.
Yeah,
you're not qualified to deal with this.
Also, you've known him for less than a week at this point. Like, it's absurd.
Yeah, anyway. Like, you've never mentioned your aunt before. Like, I mean, I go months without mentioning my uncle to my dad. Like, who, that's not a rubric for anything.
No,
whatever.
It's not.
Ugh.
So the next day, David is telling Val that he wanted to take Ben to a hospital to talk to someone, but Ben wouldn't let him, so he just drove him around, and then wonders what makes him think he can save Ben since it's not like he's doing so great himself. Great point. But when they come out to the living room where Ben slept on the couch, Val tells David he stopped Ben from hurting himself, which I guess is true. So once again, David shows up at Ben's parents' house, this time to tell them how he stopped Ben from cutting himself the night before, and looks really inappropriately smug about it, by the way, which you can also see in the visual aids.
Uh-huh.
Ben's dad says that Ben made his choices, and David says it wasn't a choice, and Ben's dad tells him to leave, and David gives his mom his contact info in case she wants to find Ben, and things escalate until David asks if his dad wants a gay son or a dead son. Oh, boy. So then... Val comes home from a run to find Ben trying to sneak off and guilts him into his guilts him about his attempt to leave without thanking David for saving his life or telling him where he's going. And Ben essentially tells her that she doesn't know his life, but she says actually she knows about hating yourself and feeling alone. And Ben says he's not ashamed of being gay. He thought killing himself would make things easier for everyone else. And Ben Val says it's not worth his losing his life for his dad's bigotry and that he has a safe place to stay. And she also says this, clip 6.
Ben, I know David. He's not going to turn his back on you. Ever.
He definitely will, by the way.
If only because it's physically difficult for him to turn into the wind because he's wearing XXXXXL clothing.
And then Ben's Christmas gift is his parents showing up at the Walsh house to say they want him to come home. He says he's fine there. And they say things like, we've been talking and we're your parents and not, for example, we're sorry. Ben tells them that if this is because it's Christmas, he's still going to be gay after the holidays. Half of my notes, hey, maybe gayer. his dad says they want what's best for him. And he knows he's made mistakes and will make more because he doesn't understand, but he'll try. And Ben, I regret to say, badly cries some more. Again, neither parent has apologized in this whole scene, but David looks proud to have made this happen. And later, Val says that David's intervention with Ben makes everything else seem dumb, like what they're doing with Donna and Noah. And of course, this leads to a kiss because, duh, we all knew this is where this was headed when this ruse began.
Yeah. I would also like to note that the continuity in terms of the timeline is all over the place. Like, mm-hmm. Christmas Eve seems to contain at least 3 days and nights in this episode. Yes. Like, when this conversation happens, it's like, according to their own accounting of where they are on the calendar, mm-hmm. it's like December 26th in the morning. Mm-hmm. But then it's Christmas Eve when his parents come to retrieve him, thanks to St. David. I don't even know.
Yeah.
The show could not care any less if it were dead, which it basically already was, but we're stuck here for another, 78 episodes? Kill me.
Yes, hell was full, and the demons are here. On to our A-plot, the Dr. Monahan / Emma drama doesn't take the holidays off. So apparently, since we last saw them, Kelly and Emma have become pals, with Emma advising Kelly about her Dr. Monahan situation and informing her that sexual harassment is about power, not sex. Brandon and David come home. Brandon immediately tenses up, seeing that Emma has invited herself over. And when David tries to make himself scarce after introductions, Brandon races after him so that he will have dinner with them and be a buffer, claiming that Kelly and Emma don't really know each other, just as their giggles are audible from downstairs. But David agrees to come back down after a shower. Except then he opens the bedroom door and Val is in there waiting with her bra out. Wow. Apparently Emma's column is some kind of serial Sex in the City diary sort of thing, because Kelly says that she's been... Pardon?
Because of course it is.
Because of course it is.
98, yeah.
Right.
Ugh.
Kelly says that she's been following it and wants to know if Emma's subject is going to keep pursuing the committed guy. Emma doesn't know, but says they did kiss. Brandon is really in over his head in clip 7.
Isn't your article confidential?
It is. The girlfriend's not the point. If two people were meant to be, they'll find a way. I believe that.
What, confidential?
Yeah, thank
She's
you.
She's not a lawyer, dude.
Also, Kelly is not asking for the subject's identity, so not relevant. Shut up, Brandon.
Yeah. Ugh.
Quit showing off everything you don't know about journalism. At the office the next day, where Emma is hanging out for some reason, Brandon checks in clip 8.
What's your article about this week?
My friend who has a thing for that committed guy.
Isn't that a little played out by now?
I don't think she's heard the last of him yet.
Well, she's heard. She's just not listening. Look, Emma, I'm attracted to you. I really am. But I can't do it. I just can't.
I'll use the what could have been angle. Leave him wondering.
It was just a kiss.
It doesn't have to be.
I would be remiss in my duties if I did not point out that Brandon is both little and played out. Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay.
Nice. At the clinic, Kelly walks some foundation broad named Audrey through their needs like more doctors. Audrey comments on Kelly's persistence and says it's no wonder Dr. Monahan is so fond of her, which gives Kelly an opening to tell Audrey about his perviness. Or so she thinks, because then Audrey is all, he's the best. Talk him up at the Christmas party. He is the clinic. Kelly tries to get out of it, but Audrey says that if Kelly is nervous about what to say, Audrey will send over his bio, and Kelly decides Audrey is not really the one to hear her Dr. Monahan complaints, or so it seems. And Emma lures Brandon to her den of single girl sin with a lie about needing him to pick up her column on a disc because her email wasn't working. But she just wanted to see him, and he has to go because Kelly is at home. But Emma says she'll still be there in an hour. Brandon states, for them, I would like to know how much travel time there is from there to the Walsh house. But anyway, Brandon states that he loves Kelly, and Emma says he probably always will, which is why he's scared to move on. Brandon says he's not going anywhere, and Emma says he already has. He just doesn't know it yet. And then we have to watch them having sex for so long. I'm not mad about how much screen time it takes up, but I am mad that my precious eyes have to look at it.
What is this, like, Danielle Steele TV movie montage of them making love? It's just really, so bad.
It's so Barbie.
And then even though she has very short hair, his watch manages to get tangled up in it like 10 times.
So when he gets home, Kelly comes bounding down and finds him putting presents under the tree because he was totally out shopping for a shitload of guilt gifts, apparently. Clip 9.
Can we open them?
No. Now remember our rule. No opening presents till Christmas morning. It's only 2 days.
Please, can't we just cheat?
No!
I don't get it.
No, you do.
Do I?
Think about it. Sarah, no. Think about it.
No.
No, I think...
No.
Brandon really needs to toughen up if he's going to keep doing this shit. Clip 10.
Listen, Kel, I'm sorry I was late.
It's okay.
No, really, I'm sorry.
Like, basically, you are begging her to ask what you're actually sorry about. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, and then we have to look at him staring over her shoulder with the concern brows for like 45 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Boo-hoo.
Indeed. Emma comes by the beat the next day with a disc that Brandon forgot to take with him the previous night, what with all the fucking. Brandon? Clip 11.
I'm an idiot.
I'm going to get that clip tattooed on my face.
Yep. Emma says it's okay. She did another draft. And even though they're in an office where anyone could walk in, she drapes herself all over him and says this. Clip 12.
You know, my wrist was actually sore. I think you bruised it with that damn watch.
I think you bruised it trying to get yourself off, because I can't imagine he cared enough to go down on you, even though the montage implied that he did. I don't buy it.
Nope. Also, the watch, I mean, it truly has its own congressman. It is so big.
It does.
Brandon is all pissy, like he wasn't a willing participant in all the fucking, as Emma says she already told Terry she wouldn't have a column in until noon. Emma is dictating people's work schedules now. Anyway, she got him a gift, which is clearly a watch, but Brandon is having guilt. Clip 13.
I didn't know how this would feel. I didn't know how wrong this would feel. I'm sorry. This has nothing to do with you. I'm in love with somebody else.
Then why'd you do it?
Honestly, I don't know.
You just wish you hadn't.
Oh, look who's all boo-boo kitty now and didn't want any strings attached before. Mm-hmm. The fuck do you care?
Also, I didn't know how this would feel. Like, you probably had an idea. Or else you wouldn't have been putting her off for 3 episodes.
Oh, God. Well, anyway. However bad it feels, looks good on you. Beach.
Yes. Brandon and Kelly attend the Clinic Christmas party, where Kelly apparently schmoozes effectively on behalf of the Clinic's financial needs. Not that we actually see her do this. And where Dr. Monahan introduces his perfectly pleasant-seeming wife, Nina. Nina says that Dr. Monahan raves about Kelly, and Dr. Monahan jokes that it's prepayment since Kelly's about to do the same about him, and sure enough, it's then time for Kelly to get on the mic. And she talks him up like a good team player, but refers to her work with him in the past tense, so this is how we learn she's rotating out again? I don't know. Whatever. Brandon is proud of her. And Nina later finds Brandon at the bar to say that Kelly's speech was great. He says this job meant a lot to her. Nina says it was a lot of hours, and Kelly probably knows Dr. Monahan better than she does. And then Dr. Monahan navigates Kelly through some donors whose ass they kiss, and then away from the party to speak to her in private, except, he just wants to get her behind a door that closes so he can kiss her. She shoves him away. He thanks her for all her kind words like a real creep. She takes off running through the party, drawing Mrs. Monahan's notice as she passes and asking Brandon if they can leave. He guesses it was Dr. Monahan and asks what he did, so she tells him. And Jason Priestley does his best to make Brandon's look icy, but since this is how he looks at everyone all the time, it's hard to tell. And he demands to know where Dr. Monahan is. And Kelly tries to stop him from doing anything, like force Dr. Monahan to point out he's like 3 feet taller than Brandon is. But anyway, they leave.
Thank you.
Then it's the next day at the clinic, and Kelly has just finished telling Audrey about the previous night's harassment. And Audrey is stunned, especially after the speech that Kelly gave. And Kelly says that if last night hadn't happened, she would have kept quiet. But what Dr. Monahan is doing is wrong. And surely the foundation will deal with this in a responsible manner that takes into account the safety and dignity of future employees at the clinic, JK Clip 14.
Listen to me, Kelly. I'm going to have to weigh every word I say very carefully. Please understand that.
Okay. I think I do.
Make sure you do. The Wyatt Foundation has a very strict policy on sexual harassment. If you're making charges...
Can't you just talk to him?
But if you brought suit later, it could look like you came to me and I did nothing on your behalf.
No, I wouldn't blame you. I don't want to make trouble for anybody.
It has to go on record. Do you understand what I'm saying?
You mean my record?
You have to think about references for future jobs. I just want you to know what you're getting into.
But I haven't done anything wrong.
Yeah, but regardless of the outcome of any judgment, here you have a young woman, first job out of college, files a sexual harassment suit against the first man she worked with.
And if people knew, they wouldn't hire me. This is so unfair. Dr. Monahan sexually harassed me.
It's your word against his.
You don't even know what his word is yet. You haven't talked to him. Like, what?
Yeah. Also, doesn't the foundation have HR? I mean, clearly right. They don't, since Kelly got hired to do whatever she wants.
Uh-huh. But also, the whole thing of, like, well, your first job out of college, like, if that, I mean, leaving aside the bullshit legal argument, which is bullshit, like, just leave it off your resume. You know, you can say that gap in your schedule was from getting shot, which you also did, also right out of college. Like, what?
Yeah.
Anyway, Brandon relents and agrees that he and Kelly can open up one gift each after all. And she wants to open the one that she saw in Brandon's bag earlier. Oh, no. And instead of saying it's not for her, he says she doesn't want to open it. But she goes ahead and rips it open and finds what she calls a man's watch, though it's a rather dainty one. And Brandon shits a brick, but Kelly loves it in clip 15.
It's exactly what I wanted. Every time I look at it, I'll think of you.
I mean, I mostly called for this clip because the baby voice is out of goddamn control throughout the episode, but especially in this exchange. But oh my God, like, here's the thing. If you look at it, if every time you look at it, you think of him, eventually all that vomit is going to ruin the crystal. Just letting you know, you should get like one of those little, remember those swatch guards?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. But, like, made of plastic.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, that's this Christmas.
Still Donna's birthday. Still no mention of it.
Nope.
In jail.
Let's name our MVP. Nat for making Zach believe in Santa?
Cute. Sure. I don't even know. Val? She didn't do anything actively bad except to, like, catch feelings for David again, which once was bad enough. So
God, no kidding. All right, least valuable player. I mean, Dr. Monahan with a literal assist from Audrey, the terrible foundation executive who has no idea how the law works and is really setting herself up for future hassles.
Ben's parents.
Yeah.
Fair. Mostly Ben Sr., but Mrs. Vichy over there, they could both eat bees. No good.
Word. All right, now user submit a challenge.
I scored some amazing scones.
This is actually not a user submitted challenge. It's a colleague submitted challenge from at Kim Reed, host of Little House on the Podcast, our sister show. She wants us to list 5 ways the episode would be better if they had an all-female writer's room. Well, Emma's motivations would be more clear, probably.
Yeah, or not that. Mrs. Ben would be like, that's my kid you're talking about. Like, you don't have to stay, but he's coming home. Fuck you. To her husband, I feel.
Donna's boobs would not do the various things they do.
Audrey would actually take up for her mentee and female colleague and understand what the law is in this situation and make sure that it's enforced. Just a suggestion.
And Kelly would not talk like that.
Yeah. Thank you. Next time on Again With This, Carly and Zach bunk with Donna and there is kidsy stuff. Emma quits the beat, but I guess still wants Brandon's meat. Sorry, because there is cheaty stuff. Tara's dead.
I'm R.I.P. sick.
And Duke returns to throw Brandon that beating. Just kidding. He's back for some gold diggy stuff in Valerie's plotline. We're betting you can't get through our visual aids without an entire bottle of Maalox. Test that theory on our website at previously.tv. You can follow that website on Twitter at previouslytv, and you can follow this very podcast on Twitter at AWT90210. I am world's literal worst suicide prevention peer counselor, Sarah D. Bunting, and I am on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Telltale Men's Watch, Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is Santa Truther, David T. Cole, and he is on Twitter at Glark. Talk to you next time.
Hi, you know what to do after the beeparoni.
I'm an idiot.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.